As mentioned, the title of my talk is Breeding for Wheat for Organic and Conventional Cropping Systems. And I'd like to start out with a couple of acknowledgments from the very beginning. I happen to be the wheat breeder, so that's why I put the talk together. But this is the team that we actually work with on organic wheat breeding. Okay, Charles Shapiro and Drew Lyon are cropping system specialists, and they're also, in Charles' case, he's a soil scientist. Drew is more of an agronomist. Stephen Knisevich is a weed scientist, and we're going to use a lot of flaming technology and cover crops to remove weeds from the areas where we have enough moisture to get weeds, because Nebraska can be quite dry. Stephen Wegulo is a plant pathologist. Gary Hine is an entomologist. Ken Russell is a corn breeder, actually, by training, whose specialty is in G by E and crossover interactions, which we think will be quite important for organic production. And then on the your right side is Rolando Flores and Randy Whaling, who are both cereal chemists. But Vicky Schlegel's kind of a really interesting person. She's a secondary products expert. And the goal is, if you're going to work in organic wheat and you're looking for value-added markets, we're going to really try to see if there's any niches we can find in our quality that is more than just the standard types of quality. And I have to acknowledge that this is supported by one of the larger grants from the USDA CREES Integrated Organic Program, and they've been very generous to our program, which we appreciate immensely, as you can imagine. And we also have to understand that this grant is only possible because of a previous grant, which was quite large also to the University of Nebraska. I was not part of this grant, but it was to develop 4 organic farms. And so we actually have a certified organic research farm at Sydney. Clay Center, Mead, and Concord are within 1 to 2 years of becoming certified organic research farms. So we will be working within the stipulations of the organic industry. Now, the reason for this research is that, quite frankly, as a public plant breeder, one of the things I'm a little bit embarrassed about is that I don't think we necessarily use our resources as well as I would have liked to, and that we often do not attempt to maximize the impact of those resources. And there's really two things which I use as that. One is that as a public breeder for the public good and publicly supported, I share my bulks with anyone who wishes to, okay? Because I feel all my germplasm should be open stock. Now, not everybody agrees with that, but I do think if you're going to be publicly supported, it should be for the general public good. The second part that catches me is we often breed for only one market. And that market historically has been the commodity wheat market. Okay, we don't look particularly hard for value-added efforts. So when I looked at the organic market, I said, you know, this could be totally complementary to my conventional program as well as to my transgenic program. You don't usually hear transgenics and organic in the same sentence, but we breed for them all. I mean, we're just, any place there's a market, we're going to work for them. So what we had, and what was interesting, is we had many lines in the conventional program that we call near misses. They are really good for almost all of the traits, but they're missing one or two things, and therefore they can't be released. I mean, at one time we had, I remember in the Northern Regional Performance Nursery, 5 of the 6 top lines in the trial were Nebraska lines, of which only one ever made it to release. Okay? So the thing that happened is that many of these lines are exceptional for end-use quality with very good disease and insect resistances, but they just don't have the exceptional grain yield, because when you're breeding for commodity wheats, you breed for the greatest amount of grain in the bag, basically. So in the past, these lines got recycled as parents or dropped, and mainly dropped because you're constantly moving forward on that. And if you look at the organic wheat market, it's marketed not so much on its agronomic performance. Now, they want acceptable agronomic performance, but what they really market on is exceptional end-use quality. And then they need good disease resistance because they're limited in their choices. There are organic pesticides, fungicides and herbicides and things like that, but they don't have the full spectrum that we have. So yield becomes important, but it's less so than in a conventional wheat program. Mm-hmm. What that does is it gives you a nice dichotomy, a nice niche that you can actually play with. So for our conventional wheat cultivars, we work mainly on excellent agronomics. And they have to be really good for grain yield, standability, those types of things. And then when it comes to the traits that the commodity market doesn't really value, things like quality, and where it can use things like fungicides or insecticides, as well as herbicides. You just have to be acceptable, okay? Because the risk isn't there. And then when you look at what happens in the organic wheat cultivars, they really market everything on end-use quality. So they want to have exceptional end-use quality. They would like to have very good disease and insect resistance, and they will accept acceptable agronomic quality. Now what you then see is you've got this really nice juxtaposition in that you can have two robust gene pools. One that's based on quality, which is what you'd like to give for all markets. One that has excellent disease and insect resistance, okay? The other one that has a tremendous agronomics, and you could be constantly putting these two together. But in the past, there was really no mechanism, at least in my program, to really retain the exceptional end-use quality ones because they didn't have an obvious place to go if they didn't have agronomics. So that's what happened, and what really caught us is that the programs aren't mutually exclusive. I mean, you should be actually keeping your exceptional end-use quality with great disease resistance and insect resistance, as well as your tremendous agronomics in your parent program. But now we've got exactly release programs also. So the research approach would be we're going to expand our crossing block because there are some traits which are very difficult for the organic producers to deal with. And historically, those are our seed-borne pathogens. My conventional program, my problem always was, I said, I would never breed for a trait that a grower could solve with a dollar's worth of chemical. I mean, it didn't make sense to waste your time on that. However, in an organic program, you do have to worry about that because they may not have the seed treatments that we can so trivially treat with. And the eustilagos, the smuts and common bunts, are extremely important. And we have some lines of ours, which I will probably have to recommend if we release them, that they cannot be sold except for being treated because they are relatively susceptible to eustilago. Now, for efficiency, I can't make two duplicate programs. So for efficiency, I'm going to treat the early generations very similarly. And this may change if I discover that weed suppression becomes extremely critical, and that's why Stephen Kanisevich is so important in the overall strategy of this. And then we'll split the later generations into a conventional and organic testing program and note that the selection criteria will be different. And what we're seeing already is we've done a number of years of testing under organic variety trials, and we're seeing what appears to be, that we haven't done the statistics on it, G by E, that the organic production system is different. Now, that could be due to a lot of different things. Historically, we plant organic production slightly later than we plant our conventional. There's a different tillage system, so there could be just a number of things. And so as a caveat, it may actually mean that our organic program may be providing lines for our minimum till system, something which our planters in our conventional system do not historically represent very well. Standard breeding program, you introduce variation. We use mainly single and three-way crosses, takes 1 to 2 years. Our segregation and selection is usually years 3 to 6, and that's basically what will be in common in both, and then in the evaluation and release, that's year 7 to 12, that's where we'll split them. And if you look at the early generation, what you should try to fix are traits that you know you're going to need for all systems. And the obvious one, you know, which is that in Nebraska, if it doesn't survive the winter, it's not going to be good for organic or conventional system. Okay? Now, the other thing is we do work very hardly on stem rust because that is the most potentially devastating, it's rare, but extremely devastating disease. We have to have good agronomics, and then we do microquality tests on everything before it goes to where we begin the split because we have to make sure we have at least adequate end-use quality. And the mixogram works extremely well for us in that purpose. And after we get past the mixogram, we start growing into larger scale trials, then we do our full mill and bakes. And I think the one aspect of this program is then we will take those lines that have gone through the mixographs, gone through the mill and bakes, we will start looking for the secondary products that might give us a unique niche that the organic market can really handle. And if it spins off into the conventional, that's fine too. But we think the organic market is where we'll first find those. Now, if you look at our testing sites, historically, we've tested at 6 sites, Alliance, Sydney, North Platte, Clay Center, Lincoln, and Mead. And this happens to be a water balance map, so you can see there's a huge water gradient across Nebraska. We've rarely tested at Concord, but that happens to be where one of our organic sites is. We have an organic site at Clay Center. We have an organic site at Sydney, and we have an organic site at Mead. So what we've done is we've taken the four organic farms, we've put variety trials at Concord, which is in probably the most difficult for the winter survival parts of Nebraska. Clay Center, which is very similar to Mead, and that's why we'll probably actually rotate between these two for our breeding nurseries, mainly because of the quality of the land. Clay Center is probably the best quality land anywhere in Nebraska, and it also has a very good farm manager. Our main breeding program is at Mead, and as well at Sydney for the organic, and these the major sites for the conventional program would be Mead, Lincoln, and Sydney. So we have them in tandem. We'll have tremendous amount of information on those sites. If we could do one thing differently, we would add another site in this area, because in Nebraska, you often lose sites due to inclement weather, hail. So we like to have two in the west, two in the central. This one is sort of central, and two in the east. And you can see we go from a corn-soybean rotation to sorghum to wheat, eventually to only prairie grasses due to moisture. I think we've pretty much summarized this, but we have six conventional sites. We now have four organic sites, two of which are really major. If you've never seen an organic wheat trial, they look very similar. If you want to know how to make money in wheat, that's the way you do it, okay? Especially at $100 a barrel, but that's not always capable. Okay, we have released a number of cultivars. The first one was 99495 from a very traditional cross, Alliance by Carl 92. It's licensed to the Kansas organic wheat producers. We believe that that's the way you represent or keep benchmarks on how you're doing in plant breeding. It's a very high-yielding semi-dwarf, medium plant height, acceptable winter hardiness, pretty similar to Alliance and a little earlier than Millennium. It's resistant to Hessian fly stem rust. It has some leaf rust resistance, susceptible to wheat streak and to soil borne. What it really has, it's the best quality wheat that's probably been released in my program in the last 21 years as just a flat, straight, generic wheat. Kellogg's likes this one, and they want a million bushels of it. So it's a small market, but it's something which growers can deal with. This is what it looks like in the field, and it's ideally suited for the western part of the state. Okay. We do have another one, NE01481, which is under review. It'll also be exclusively released. Extremely high yielding, best quality, again, of the recent lines we've had. But it has, in this case, soil-borne mosaic virus, and it's adapted to eastern Nebraska, so we can begin to spread out and diversify the production. So with that, we think we've got some pretty good lines that are potential and able to go there. As we move forward, we really want to get to truly organic wheat programs. We don't want to have something which is a near miss. We want to have it as something which is going to be a stellar organic type. And that's why we've expanded our milling and baking tests beyond our traditional ones to add Vicki Schlegel, who's going to look at the secondary products. We also hope to increase the understanding of G by E interactions. I don't know if you know, but in Nebraska, the variation from Omaha to Scotts Bluff is as much as the variation from Omaha to Washington, D.C. So G by E is everything in our program. And now that we've added a different sort of tillage system and cultural practices, we really need to go in there. And that will determine whether we can go later as we sample, have to go earlier as we sample in the organic program. Again, it relates to what I think is just good breeding practices and how you'd set up any program. Just gives us a little more opportunity. So with that, those are the two main thrusts for the future. And with that, I'll say thank you. And I guess, Kevin, I don't know if we have a time for a question or not.
We do have time for a question.
Pardon me? Okay, the question is, what is the percent of organic wheat in the U.S.? You know, to be honest with you, I don't know that answer. But what I would say is if you go to any grocery store now, you will see more shelf space used by the organic production. And when we first talked to ADM about how we should develop white wheats, Dave Green, which many of us know, said, Steve, if you're going to work on something, work on organic wheats because that's where the growth is. Now, I do believe that white wheats will be very important. But what we're seeing is a cascade of more interest. And what I see is sort of a disenfranchised group of people that have not had breeders actually give them their best efforts. You know, they've sort of got, well, this one works conventionally. You should try it in organic. And I don't think that's good enough. I can't give you the market, but I will say this. It's huge, and it's expanding very rapidly. Yeah, Brett.
Can you elaborate on what you're doing for wheat suppression, whether it's flexing targets?
Well, the Brett Carver, my good buddy, asked the question, now, what are we doing for weed suppression? And actually, Brett, what we hope to do is model our program after your program on canopy cover. Okay? And probably what we'll actually do for weed suppression is we're going to time it with flaming, which I didn't know this, but you can flame an acre, which sounds really bizarre. You go out, I mean, global warming and all this stuff, but you run a flame over the acre and you burn the weeds to a crisp. And in that area, there's two things you can do. You can breed for wheats that tolerate flaming, okay, and which we will probably try to do. And you can also see economically how that works to suppress weeds. You can also breed for cover crops. So because, you know, the organic systems are always very interested in a system. They're not just interested in wheat. So we're wondering, do we want to develop a spring barley, for example, because we breed winter barleys, that will winter kill, that then suppresses weeds, not for the wheat, but for the crop that would follow, that needs a summer or a winter annual to hold the weeds down when you plant in the spring. Say, you know, something like a soybean or organic corn. So there's a, you know, we always think of it as a crop, Brett, but we're actually thinking as a system, you know, could we have a super flame susceptible wheat that you'd flame out to plant in the way you know, use Roundup to burn out rye when you plant corn on slopes. So there's quite a bit of things like that. Probably should. Thank you.